welcome to another episode of Ravensdale Revisited. Today we're talking about the 1970s with Pete Ritchie, the president of the Ravensdale Historical Society. The 1970s brought both loss and progress to Ravensdale. While the closing of the library and the junior high saddened many residents, new investments helped reaffirm the town as a good place to live, including a civic center, a senior center, two parks, renewed Arbor Day celebrations, free tax assistance for seniors, and the rehabilitation of Crystal Lake. The city's oldest school building, originally constructed in 1890 as the Parker School, was demolished to make way for a $3.5 million 35-classroom addition to Ravensdale Junior High. Over the decades, the building had served as an elementary school, a junior high, and a district office. During this decade, Heidi Hook made history as one of the few girls in Ravensdale and possibly the state to play Little League baseball. Praised by her coach as one of the team's best players, she and 14 other girls were allowed to compete after the local board acted ahead of a narrow national vote ending Little League's boys-only policy. Promiscuous Ravensdale cats and dogs forced city officials into a no-nonsense stand on the animals' sexual activities. On September 25th, the Ravensdale City Council gave preliminary approval to an amendment to the leashing ordinance, which would require female dogs and cats in heat to be confined within a building until out of heat. At the time, Ravensdale had about 3,000 dogs and 1,500 cats. In the 1970s, the neighborhood was wide open and kids were truly free range, wandering far beyond front yards and sidewalks. Parking ramps became stages for skateboarding and improvised adventures. And when no one showed up for Kick the Can in the Alley, places like North Memorial Hospital and Montgomery Ward offered new backdrops for exploration. Woods, parks, and even muddy swamps invited fort building and tests of courage. For the underaged and unsupervised, Ravensdale was a playground and proving ground for daring, discovery, and mischief.
In 1970, the Ravensdale School District decides that the old Ravensdale Junior High, where they have their district offices, the high school is moved over to Toledo Avenue. Attached to the junior high is still the Parker School that was built in 1890. They decide they're going to tear that down. You couldn't see the original building because it had been so encased with different additions over the years. They just kept adding on to the school. And so the first addition goes in 1914. There's another addition in 1920. But it was a nice-looking old brick building, and somewhere in the middle was the very old school. And people tell me about the steps were so worn. There were some stone steps just inside, and they were so worn because they'd been, you know, trampled on by kids for years and years, that there were little divots and it was sort of little indentations all over these steps. So they tear this building down and they build a great big new wing onto Ravensdale Junior High. And the plan then is to move the district offices over to Boone and 42nd, where they eventually constructed a very strange looking tower that now they're going to vacate. In America, buildings don't last as long as people, for instance. The new wing they built onto Ravensdale Junior High School was great until they closed that school about 7 years later. So the wing didn't get a whole lot of use, but it was a good looking thing. The Ravensdale Junior High also had the swimming pool in it. The junior highs, for some reason, in the school district had the swimming pools rather than the high schools. Whenever we bring up the swimming pools in the Ravensdale School District, there is always a group of men that come forward and say, "We all had to swim naked. The guys swam naked. That's right. We swam naked. I thought it was so weird that we all swam naked." And I've heard so many different reasons why this might be. They didn't want to buy suits. They did buy suits for the girls. And of course, you had boys gym class and girls swim class. So what was the problem? I mean, there's no women around. Of course you guys could swim naked. I think a lot of these guys didn't like swimming naked, but they did, and they just got over it. And that was the rule, and they're still talking about it. Somebody recently sent me an article that had been published in Fargo, of all places, of somebody who grew up in this area. And they were just recounting this story again, because it just never gets old to think of these poor boys and how they didn't get any swimsuits and they just had to get out there and swim. And why was that okay? Or even a good idea? That didn't happen to me. I got into junior high in the early 80s. And by that time, they gave us swimsuits. I guess I'm not even sure you could bring your own. I think you were supposed to just wear these little black Speedos that they gave us. In the 1970s, North Memorial Hospital is just becoming a bigger and bigger interest in the city. And of course, that's one of the most important pieces of our tax base.
was this giant hospital that was employing so many people, and it just kept expanding. During the 60s, when they first started expanding, the mayor Sahaki at the time was a little annoyed with them because they wanted to build these giant parking ramps, and he actually stopped them from doing that for a moment. You know, suggested, hey, North Memorial, you own lots of land out in Maple Grove. Why don't you go expand out there? Eventually they did, of course, but they kept building onto the big hospital on Lowry. And for some reason, this hospital was such an attraction. I'm going to try and leave myself out of this, but I can't. It was just such an attraction for us neighborhood kids. What are you doing? I don't know. Let's go down to the hospital. What are we going to do at the hospital? Well, you know, there's a tunnel. I'm like, what? There's a tunnel? These kids take me down there. And underneath Oakdale Avenue, between North Memorial Hospital, and then they had built a new office building on the other side of the street called the Oakdale Medical Center. There was this tunnel. It never got old. To go into the hospital, go down, take the elevator down to the ground floor, go through the tunnel, take the elevator up on the other side. And so that was the first piece of entertainment at the hospital. The other thing is when they finally built this giant parking ramp, 6 stories tall, you've got Highway 52 or Old 81 on one side and Oakdale on the other side. And you can see off into the distance, you can see downtown Minneapolis. There's, you know, the IDS and the Fauché, and it was just a great view up there. We're little squirts. We're probably 9 or 10. And what do you want to do? Let's go to the parking ramp. Okay. They had a big circular thing where you could go up the parking ramp. Maybe if you were really slick, I never got to be this cool, you could grab a skateboard and you could skate down in circles. What I did get to do that was fun on the parking ramp is we took our G.I. Joes and we made them plastic bag parachutes. And you go up to the 6th floor of the parking ramp and you fling them off and they sail over there off into the middle of Highway 52 or wherever they're going to land. And we did that a couple times. And then, you know, I remember this guy, an old security guard. He must have been, you know, in his 60s or 70s. And he snuck up behind us. I mean, how could we not hear him? He was... You know, and all of a sudden he's like, hey, you kids, come with me. You know, of course, you know, he's kind of marching us out of there. And at some point we figure out we're not really going to go with you to wherever the security office is or wherever you think you're taking us. And we just run. As soon as we hit the ground floor, it's like, run. And so off we go. And he's yelling in the background, but it was just background noise. However, not everybody in the neighborhood was as thrilled with the hospital as we were. There was a neighbor and a friend of mine's dad who built a big sign and his house overlooked Manor Park. And so as they kept building things and were blocking his view of the sky, I guess, or just he didn't want to look at the backside of the hospital. And as the hospital does things like add a heliport, they had a helicopter that would land out in front of the emergency room. And that was noisy. Puts up a big sign that says, is North Memorial ruining our neighborhood? And I think that sign was up for at least 5 or 6 years. So there was a little bit of protest about this giant hospital and their parking ramps, but they just kept going. They built another parking ramp and another 6-story wing and made them the regional medical care center that they are now. The other thing that was odd about the hospital is it had this restaurant in front. This is where we would go out to eat for some reason. So, you know, we're like 13, 14, and we'd get the guts up to ask a girl if they want, hey, let's go out to eat. Or, you know, why don't you meet me at the hospital? What? Why would anybody want to meet you at the hospital? But sure, there's a hospital here, and it's got this restaurant out in front, and it sort of feels like you're in a city because there's these tall buildings around you. And so we would go in, and of course, it was a waiter or a waitress would come to the table. And so it was a class joint. And we didn't have our own phones, so there were phone booths in the hospital. So if we wanted to just go talk to somebody on the phone for hours and hours, and maybe it was somebody we didn't want to talk to in front of our parents or in our own house, maybe if you weren't lucky enough to have your own phone in your own room, you would go down to the hospital and put in a dime and sit in that phone booth. And, well, I'm sure there were people that had far more important business to discuss, but there were plenty of phone booths. And if we were taking up one for a long time, that would be fine. So Robbinsdale continues to be a powerhouse in sports, our wrestling team, our basketball team. And of course, we get women's sports in the 1970s. So they build a great big wing onto the Robbinsdale High School and they put a new gym there. In theory, that is going to be for all the women's sports, like the gymnastics. And then we had a tennis team and we had a girls' swim team. And they just kept adding them as we went along. By the mid-70s, you get a girls' softball team. Also at the time, which, you know, it's hard to believe that this was ever controversial in any way at all. We had a girl named Heidi Hoke who became one of Robbinsdale's very first and very few girls that were on the Little League team. They ran into a little pushback because you had some other teams that didn't want to play a team with a girl on it. There was a lawsuit filed, and of course she got to play. She won the suit, and but this was happening all over the country. The National Little League rescinded its boys-only policy shortly after Heidi Hoke won her little lawsuit. So Heidi and 14 other girls got to play because the Robbinsdale Little League board, before the national office, voted 8-7 to let girls compete. So not sure that Robbinsdale really had a big role in that, but it, you know, it seems like it would have been inevitable. But we played our part. In 1976, sadly, the bicentennial year, the city has put up these little signs as you drive into town that say, you know, we're going to celebrate the bicentennial. Let progress be our heritage. And that sign goes up. It's eventually replaced at the end of the decade with these Tree City USA signs. But we put that Spirit of 76 sign up everywhere. The Robbinsdale Library is slated to close. They're building a brand new library down there on Rockford Road. My mom actually ended up working at that one and has some memory of books being transported from the Robbinsdale Library over to the Rockford Road Library. And whenever you checked out books, you would always see that the Robbinsdale stamp was on there. Milo Milkey, who had been the principal over at the high school and had served on various boards around town and advised the city council. And he was furious about the library being closed. He only lived about a block down. I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. And he wasn't a member of the library club, but he spoke to them often enough. But they decided to close the library despite all the protests. And, you know, there were a couple other really strange ideas to actually pick up this building and move it over to where Grazier Park is. And you would create this little area where you would have your library building. You would have this little stone fireplace. And it never got anywhere, but the plans were drawn up and saved over at City Hall for a number of years. So when the library closes, the library club decides, and their membership at this time is mostly in their 70s and 80s, we really don't want to have to deal with a building. They decide to give the building to the city of Robbinsdale. There's some paperwork to be filled out. It is agreed that they're not going to meet here anymore. They're just meeting in people's houses at that point. So the city agrees to it. And because this land was donated by the Parker family for a library, and the library club kind of kept that in there. And so this land always has to be for a civic purpose. And the city decides at some point we're going to get the Robin Gallery in here. And that's a civic purpose. We've got a nonprofit art gallery to promote culture in the city, et cetera. The next tenant is actually the Teen Annex, which was a teen sexual health advisory place. They also had a pool table in the basement, but it was a place where people could come in and talk to somebody, get some counseling around birth control. They did venereal disease testing. And so since the junior high was just down the block or something, the joke was always, hey, mom, I got to stay after school and take a test. But they were here for, over a decade. In the 1980s, they actually, while there were abortion protests going on West Broadway, the teen clinic was actually firebombed in our basement here. And there's a sort of a striking picture in the Minneapolis Star Tribune where you have this woman with her hands on her hips standing in the burned out office, just staring into the camera, furious. And they never did find out who did it. In a rare exception to the rule, the Robbinsdale Fire Department, which is only about two blocks down from here, managed to get here in time. And that's why we're still sitting here, because the building was saved. The teen clinic got a grant. They remodeled, continued on with their services. The Robbinsdale Historical Society, and this is strange that
It's a piece of history that we're not even sure of. For a long time, we met in City Hall occasionally. Then we met in the basement of the fire station. It appears from the usual roundup of unreliable sources that the Historical Society didn't get into this building until the 90s. The Historical Society gets founded in 1978, and all the names, when I look at who started the Historical Society, it's all the people who started Robbinsdale. There's two Shumways, and they were some of the first settlers here, of course. There's a Girling and an Ambrose, and of course, their Girling house is still over there on Crystal Lake, and one of our members still lives at that house. Has been in the family since 1917, and the Ambrose house is just above Guarantee State Bank, or Citizens State Bank, as it's called now, and that one was also built in 1917. But it's the families and the sons and daughters, or maybe in some case grandsons and granddaughters of the pioneers that came here and settled it. And it's kind of a story that I notice. I can't believe how many families in Robbinsdale stay here generation after generation. Not only stay here for generations, but pass the same house along. When I was growing up, I lived next door to a family where grandma had bought the house and built it. Her daughter was living in it. And after grandma passed away and her daughter moved out, her daughter bought it. So it was, you know, a house that stayed in the family for three generations. And it's just not that uncommon. There's people that love Robbinsdale so much. Not only will they never leave, but they insist their children and grandchildren never leave either. I mean, it's kind of a cute thing about this town. And when you start digging into the history and you see these names beginning in the 1890s and carrying on right up to the present day, when just looking at our membership list, I can see these names and know something about all these families, which is, it's an odd thing too, because sometimes somebody will come into the Historical Society and I've read so much about their family that I just start talking to them about their family. And I'm wondering if it might be a little creepy that I know more about your grandfather than you do. And I know all the arguments he was involved in about the municipal liquor store and the letter he sent to the city council where he ranted and raved and threatened. But I guess that's just part of being a little local historian. I might know more about your family than you do. So, but I'll try and only tell you the good stuff. But we still have a great culture of schools in Robbinsdale in the 1970s. Lee School is here and, it still has one of the largest elementary school classes in it. The junior high, we have Lakeview Elementary that was built over in the 60s. We've got the high school is still a powerhouse. And the Robbinsdale School District is thriving at this point, but of course they have expanded well beyond the borders of Robbinsdale and have gone out and conquered, you know, most of Plymouth and Crystal and New Hope. And we're all called Robbinsdale schools. But whenever it's time to close a school, and this starts happening in the 1970s, it's always going to be in Robbinsdale. So because we have the oldest schools. So we got a newer junior high school out there in Hosterman. We got another pretty new junior high school out there in Sandburg, in Golden Valley, where half of Robbinsdale ends up going. The high schools are newer. The elementary schools are newer in the western part as Robbinsdale's population starts aging. And of course, Robbinsdale's houses just, it's not that the houses out in Golden Valley or New Hope aren't modest homes for most part. There's some nicer neighborhoods. You know, I don't think of them as wealthy suburbs. Not necessarily, maybe Golden Valley, but certainly not New Hope. but Robbinsdale's housing stock is much older, and it's just starting to show its age. And as its population ages, we have declining enrollment. So it kind of makes sense that they're going to close some of these schools. But it also leads to a feeling of being picked on a little bit. When I would go out to Sandburg, and then I would go visit my friends and their houses in Golden Valley, well, they were newer, mid-century modern. They were, they seemed to be packed with nicer stuff. The cars in the driveway were a little nicer. It kind of led to this feeling that, you know, Robbinsdale's picked on because it's not quite as wealthy
and it's older, and that's why you're closing the schools on this side of town, which to some extent might have been true. So I'm just thinking about restaurants and shopping and what might be different in the 1970s than you have now. Of course, Robbinsdale was not Eat Street then, but we still had a restaurant or two. Matter of fact, I went to go eat at the Thai place overlooking Crystal Lake and beautiful Highway 81 there. And I realized when I sat down in one of those booths that I hadn't been there since it was Mr. Steak. And I don't remember going to Mr. Steak all that often. And it looks like the parking lot hasn't been redone since I was a kid either. And the sign still seems to have the Mr. Steak shape, although now it's a Thai restaurant. But the booths are the same. The fake rocks up on the walls are the same. It's hard to say what changed in there exactly, maybe some colors, but it's a pretty well-preserved, and it could have been built in the early 60s or in the 60s, but I remember it in the 70s. And you got this great little puppet when you went to Mr. Steak that sort of looked like a chef's hat, but also kind of looked like a cow. I was never quite sure what it was. I didn't get to go there that often because, well, I think Mr. Steak was kind of spendy. I also remember that they didn't serve beer, which annoyed my dad. What do you mean? I'm going to have a steak and I'm not going to have a beer? That seems strange. But then we went down the road when we got lucky enough to get out to eat, and there was Pizza Hut. And of course, you could get, I guess it was a 3-2 pitcher of beer at Pizza Hut. At least that's the way I remember it. The Pizza Hut was there for probably opened up in the late 60s, all through the 70s and 80s, and eventually went down. Although I think there's a Papa John's in the same space now, but I can't tell you exactly when that got torn down. The other fast food novelty we had in town was this place called the Red Barn. And you might remember the old commercials where when the hungries hit, then you go to the Red Barn. And the Red Barn had a bunch of puppets that looked like Muppets. And their commercials were, I can't remember the names of these guys, but Red Barn was a huge hit. Of course, it looked like a barn. It didn't last long either, though, so it gets built in the late 60s, and they've got it torn down by the 80s. As you go over into Robbins Center, you've got Merwin Drug, and they had a little restaurant in the back of Merwin Drug where everybody liked to go, and it was a popular family eatery. But it's one of those places where you're in the back of this drugstore, and there are no windows, and it always felt so claustrophobic in there to me. But a popular place to eat. Another one was Montgomery Ward's had a cafeteria. When you're a kid and there's not much to do and your mom tells you to go get out of the house, what are you going to do? I'm going to wander around the neighborhood and I'm going to go down the hill and there's Montgomery Ward's. What am I going to do in Montgomery Ward's? Well, you know, I might have $2 on me if I'm lucky. I'm just going to wander around aimlessly through the aisles. Ward's was a full service department store at that time, so they had pets. And I remember going down there with two little friends of mine. I think we were 8 or 9. We go down to Montgomery Ward's and we buy white mice because that's what they sell back in the pet department. And we bring them home. My mom was relatively tolerant and it was just the beginning of all sorts of little pets that we brought back from Montgomery Ward's. But the other thing they had was the Buffeteria, which we just thought was what a great name for a restaurant and a department store. And again, it's tucked way back somewhere in the department store back behind the shoe or sporting goods departments. The food was awful. That's the part I remember when it was open. You know, I don't think it was open very often, but when it was, we, you know, get into the line and get a pronto pup or whatever other thing they were selling. But again, Buffeteria, which, you know, of course you say Barfeteria because what else would you call it? The other thing about being a kid in the 1970s, and I'm not sure that everybody did this, one of the points of wandering around the neighborhood and then going into one of these stores, whether it was a department store or the Snyder Drug that was in Robbins Center or Merwin Drug or any of these other stores, is at what point would they kick you out of the store for loitering, for causing a nuisance, whatever it might be, accusing you of shoplifting? We would never do that kind of behavior at the Wax Museum because we didn't ever want to get kicked out of the record store. And besides, the guys who worked there were really cool and we wouldn't want to upset them or annoy them in any way. So we were well behaved in there. But when we went into Montgomery Ward's, it was like, will we get kicked out of the department store for running through the aisles? Will we get kicked out of the department store if we sing songs? What if we sing Kiss songs? what if we go into the department store with Kiss makeup on and start singing Kiss songs and hide underneath the clothing racks? And when people come out, we jump out and sing Kiss songs. You can get kicked out of the department store for just about any of those behaviors, as it turns out, if the right person is watching. And the place was fully staffed. It wasn't like, it seems like at some point you go into department stores and you didn't see a person, so you could walk around the clothing department or the shoe department, and then you look around and try and find a place where you could pay for stuff. Back then, there were little counters there, and there was always somebody standing at that counter, so it didn't take long to get kicked out. But that's okay if you get kicked out at Ward's, because then you can just go down to Robin Center or go into Merwin Drug and see how quickly they'll kick you out of the store and how angry they'll get. Not to say that all kids in Robbinsdale were that obnoxious, but I don't think I was the only one that ever tried that out. But the other thing that was great about Robbinsdale growing up is you had an excellent parks department, and there were always things going on at the parks. Everybody remembers box hockey was one of our favorite games, which was basically you had a wooden box and a puck and a divider in the middle of the wooden box, and you got a chance taking turns to make these shots, one to get through the middle divider and one to get past the goalie. And so you both, you had two people playing these games, and the game always started out by whacking the stick on the box and then whacking the stick together and then whacking the stick on the other side of the box and whacking the sticks together. And then you would just go at it. The park board, there always seemed to be cool teenagers that were stationed in the warming houses. Boot hockey seemed to be at least as popular as the regular hockey. There would always be a team over there practicing on the hockey rink, but there'd be twice as many kids just out there on the skating rink, a lot of times in their boots, and they'd cornered off a little spot and created little snow goals. New playgrounds went up, and we had great playground equipment with great big slides. There was T-ball, and then there was Little League, but the T-ball teams, you know, you would have a great big championship, and you'd end up with a trophy if your team won, and you got to go play at the different parks all around Robbinsdale. And the funny thing I remember about T-ball is the outfield, they would stick the little kids in the outfield. Well, how many kids should be in the outfield? Let's just put 8 of them out there. So you'd have a normal setup inside the diamond, but in the outfield, you might have 8 outfielders. And then when somebody actually did get the ball out to the outfield, chances are these kids were going to fight over that ball, and they'd start, one of them would grab the ball, and the next one would push him down and grab, take the ball away from him. And eventually the ball might make it back into the infield. But by then, you know, whoever had managed to smack it out there was probably all the way around the bases. And then the infielders would look at the outfielders and shake their heads and yell at them and blame them. And now we're going to lose for sure. Okay, in 1977, Ms. Alma K. Howard, civic leader and president of the Howard Lubber Company, died. That was in January. She was 91 years old. So her home that was built in 1915 at 4100 Quail Avenue has many details typical of the Prairie School of Architecture. And I'm told that it was sketched by Frank Lloyd Wright. Her husband, Tom Howard, was president of the First Robbinsdale State Bank. And the home was where they started the Lions Club in Robbinsdale, which is still there. The home was later occupied by a bank president, Kenneth Sheehan of the First Bank of Robbinsdale. It's just a house that everybody knows in this town. It has that Prairie School. A lot of people call it the Frank Lloyd Wright house. I got no evidence that Frank Lloyd Wright had anything to do with this house, but somebody looked at something he did and said, I'd like to do something like that. But it's a beautiful home, and it's over there on Quail Avenue. The other end of Quail Avenue is another bank president's house, so that must have been the Avenue of Bank Presidents. In March of 1977, one of the last original houses in Robbinsdale was torn down. It had been built in 1854, it's believed, by J.S. Melbourne on the south side of 40th Avenue, a third of a block west of Broadway. It was small and had an addition, and in the opinion of the Minnesota Historical Society, it wasn't worth preserving. I think anything that was built in the 1850s is worth preserving. And of course, we've got that barn out there just north of Brazier Park. That certainly seems worth preserving. And it was built in the 1850s. It's still standing. In the 1970s, it was used by the Osterhus Printing Company as their warehouse. And it was used that way right up until just a couple of years ago when the print shop closed. They still got the bookstore there. I don't think the bookstore is using it as a warehouse, though. I think it's pretty much just sitting empty.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.